All right, everybody, welcome back. Ready to geek out on some injection molding tech with me today?
Always ready to dive in.
Awesome. So today we are taking a deep dive into how to minimize fusion marks in your injection molding projects.
Great topic. Those pesky lines can be a real headache.
Yeah, they can. And we've got a stack of articles here all about how to fine-tune that melt temperature to banish those marks for good.
Sounds good.
So let's start with the basics. Why is melt temperature so important in this whole equation?
Well, it really is the key to it all. It's kind of like the conductor of an orchestra, you
I
know?
like that.
Yeah, melt temperature impacts everything, how the plastic flows, the strength of the final product. It's really a big deal.
So it's not just about melting the plastic, it's about getting it to behave exactly how you want.
Exactly. And it's not as simple as just cranking up the heat.
Right.
These articles all emphasize that hitting that precise temperature is key. Like one expert was working with polycarbonate and found that a tiny adjustment, just 20 degrees, was like night and day in terms of reducing fusion marks.
Wow, so even small changes can make a big difference.
Yeah, they really can.
But I'm guessing different plastics react differently to heat, right?
Absolutely. Each plastic has its own sweet spot. Think of it like Goldilocks too hot, and you risk degrading the plastic and making it weak. Too cold, and you'll have flow issues, which also lead to defects. It's all about finding that perfect balance.
So knowing your materials is crucial.
Oh, for sure.
And the articles actually give us some specific temperature ranges, right?
They do.
Okay, cool.
For example, polystyrene likes it between 180 and 280 degrees Celsius.
Right.
Polypropylene prefers a slightly hotter range, 200 to 280. But then you've got PVC, which is super sensitive to heat.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. One expert shared a story about accidentally overeating it and releasing harmful gases.
Yikes, not good.
No, not at all. Turns out PVC has a much narrower comfort zone, only about 160 to 220 degrees.
So working with PVC requires some serious precision.
It does.
But it's not just about the type of plastic, right? The mold itself must impact melt temperature as well.
You're absolutely right. Even if you nail the perfect melt temperature, a poorly designed mold can totally throw things off.
Okay.
Uneven cooling channels are a common culprit. They create temperature inconsistencies within the mold, leading to, you guessed it, more fusion marks.
So it's like trying to bake a cake in an oven with hot and cold spots. You're never going to get an evenly cooked cake.
Haha, perfect analogy. What's the solution? Well, one article raved about something called conformal cooling channels.
Conformal cooling channels.
Yeah, imagine a perfectly tailored suit, but for your mold.
Okay.
These channels hug the shape of the mold cavity, providing super precise cooling control, preventing those drastic temperature differences.
Interesting.
Right.
So it's about having the right plastic at the right temperature inside a perfectly designed mold. But isn't there more to it than just those three elements?
Of course.
I mean, you mentioned other parameters earlier.
You're bringing up a crucial point.
Okay, good.
Melt temperature can't be adjusted in isolation. It's part of a larger system.
Right.
Things like injection pressure and speed all need to be carefully coordinated.
So it's like a dance. All of these parameters need to move together in harmony.
Exactly. And adjusting one without considering the others can lead to a whole host of new problems. One article gave a fantastic example. They were working with ABS plastic and discovered that by increasing the melt temperature, they could actually lower both the injection pressure and speed.
Interesting.
This resulted in fewer fusion marks and prevented other defects.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah, it is.
So it's not just about finding the right temperature, it's about finding the right combination of settings across the entire process.
Absolutely.
What other parameters do we need to consider alongside melt temperature?
Well, two important ones are holding time and pressure.
Okay, so what are those exactly?
Holding time refers to how long the molten plastic is held under pressure in the mold after injection. And holding pressure is, well, the amount of pressure applied during that time.
Okay, so why do those matter when we're tweaking the melt temperature?
Well, because shrinkage becomes a factor when you're dealing with hotter melt temperatures.
Oh, I see.
As the plastic cools and hardens, it tends to shrink a bit. If you don't adjust the holding time and pressure accordingly, you could end up with warped parts or parts that don't meet your size requirements.
So it's like baking a loaf of bread. If you don't account for rising and cooling, you might end up with a brick instead of a fluffy loaf.
That's a great way to put it. And that brings us to another important consideration when it comes to melt temperature, the potential downsides of going too hot.
Let's talk about those risks. What can go wrong if we get a little too enthusiastic with the heat?
Well, the biggest risk is something we touched on earlier, thermal degradation. if the plastic gets too hot for too long,
mm-hmm.
its molecular structure starts to break down, which weakens the material.
So it's like leaving that bread in the oven too long. Burnt crust, dry insides, not exactly what we're going for.
Exactly. And just like burnt bread, thermally degraded plastic loses its desirable properties. It might become brittle, warp easily, or develop surface defects.
And I remember the articles mentioned a few other potential pitfalls, too.
Right. Increased cycle times are another concern. Hotter plastic takes longer to cool and solidify in the mold, which can slow down your whole production process. Not ideal if you're trying to meet deadlines or maximize output.
So it's a trade-off.
Yeah.
Higher melt temperatures can improve flow and reduce fusion marks, but they can also lead to longer cooling times and potentially compromise the strength of the part.
Precisely. It's all about finding that sweet spot where you get the benefits of higher temperatures without sacrificing the integrity of the plastic. And that's where understanding the specific materials you're working with becomes absolutely crucial.
Okay, so we need to know our plastics inside and out. What are some key things to pay attention to when assessing the risk of thermal degradation?
The articles highlight a few important factors. First, the inherent heat sensitivity of the material itself. We've already talked about how sensitive PVC is to heat. Even a small temperature overshoot can have major consequences.
Right. So PVC requires a delicate touch. What else should we be watching out for?
Another factor is the residence time of the plastic in the barrel.
Residence time.
This refers to how long the plastic sits in the heated barrel of the injection molding machine before it's injected into the mold.
And why is residence time so important?
Because the longer the plastic is exposed to heat, the greater the risk of degradation.
Oh, okay.
It's like leaving a pot of soup simmering on the stove for hours. It eventually starts to burn and lose its flavor.
So we need to be mindful of both the temperature and the time the plastic spends under heat. Anything else to add to our checklist?
Yes, one more thing. Shear rate.
Shear rate. What's that?
This basically measures how much the plastic is being stretched and deformed during the injection process. Higher shear rates generate more heat due to friction, which can increase the risk of thermal degradation.
So it's like kneading dough. The more you work it, the warmer it gets.
Exactly. And just like over-kneading dough can make it tough, excessive shear rates can damage the plastic and lead to defects.
Okay, so we've got a lot to juggle. Material sensitivity, residence time, shear rate. Managing melt temperature sounds like a delicate balancing act with a lot of potential pitfalls.
It definitely can be. But that's where the skill and experience of an injection molding technician come in. By understanding how these factors interact, they can fine-tune the process to get the best results while minimizing risks.
So it's not just a science, it's an art form.
Well put. But let's bring it back down to earth for a second. What are some concrete steps injection molding pros can take to mitigate the risks of using high melt temperatures?
Yeah, give us the practical tips.
First and foremost, choose the right material for the job. If you're working with a heat-sensitive plastic like PVC, you'll need to be extra careful with your melt temperature settings.
Right, so material selection is key. What else can we do?
You can also optimize your injection molding machine settings. This includes minimizing residence time to prevent the plastic from sitting in the heated barrel for too long. You can also adjust the screw speed and back pressure to control the shear rate and reduce frictional heating.
So we're being gentle with the plastic and not overworking it. What about the mold itself? Are there ways to manage melt temperature more effectively on that front?
Absolutely. As we mentioned earlier, mold design plays a huge role in temperature management. Well-designed cooling channels, like these conformal cooling channels, are essential for even cooling and preventing hot spots.
Right, those tailor-made cooling channels we talked about. What else can we do with the mold design?
Well, using materials with high thermal conductivity for the mold itself can help dissipate heat more efficiently.
So the mold acts like a heat sink. Clever. Any other tricks up our sleeve?
Another option is to use hot runner systems instead of conventional cold runners.
Hot runner systems.
Yeah, hot runner systems keep the plastic molten throughout the entire injection process, reducing the risk of thermal degradation and improving part quality.
Okay, so we've got a whole toolbox here. Material selection, machine optimization, mold design, hot runner systems. It sounds like a multifaceted approach is key.
It really is. By considering all these factors and using best practices, injection molding professionals can minimize the risks associated with high melt temperatures and produce high-quality parts with fewer defects.
That's the goal. Now, before we wrap up this part of our deep dive, there's one more point from the articles I want to touch on. They mention that sometimes those fusion marks aren't just a cosmetic issue, they can actually be a sign of a deeper structural problem.
That's a really important point that often gets overlooked. While fusion marks are often seen as purely aesthetic defects, they can sometimes indicate areas of weakness within the part.
Okay, break this down for me. How can a little line on the surface mean the part isn't as strong as it should be?
Well, think of it this way. Those fusion marks represent boundaries, where two flows of molten plastic met, but didn't fully fuse together. Imagine gluing two pieces of wood together. If the bond isn't strong, the joint will be weaker than the surrounding wood.
So the fusion mark is like a weak link in the chain.
Exactly. And while a single fusion mark might not significantly compromise the overall strength, multiple fusion marks or fusion marks in high-stress areas can definitely be a cause for concern.
That makes sense. So what's the solution? Do we need to eliminate all fusion marks, no matter how small or insignificant they seem?
Well, that would be ideal, but it's not always practical or necessary. The key is to understand the application of the part and the stresses it will be under.
So if a part is going to be under a lot of stress, we need to be extra vigilant about fusion marks.
Exactly. For those types of applications, minimizing fusion marks is crucial. You might need to adjust the melt temperature, optimize injection pressure and speed, or even redesign the mold to improve flow and reduce the chance of fusion lines forming.
And for parts that aren't under as much stress, a few minor fusion marks might not be a big deal.
Right. In those cases, some minor cosmetic fusion marks might be acceptable as long as they don't affect the part's functionality.
So it's about finding that balance between aesthetics and structural integrity.
Precisely. And that's where the expertise of an experienced injection molding professional is invaluable. They can assess the application, evaluate the severity of the fusion marks, and make informed decisions about the best course of action.
Okay, so we've covered a lot today, from melt temperature basics to the potential risks and the importance of considering fusion marks in the context of part design and application. What are some key takeaways our listeners should remember?
Well, I think the biggest takeaway is that melt temperature is not a set it and forget it variable. It's something that needs to be carefully considered and adjusted based on the specific material part design and application requirements.
Right.
And always remember that those fusion marks, they might be more than just cosmetic blemishes.
Mm-hmm.
They can be a sign of underlying structural weaknesses. So pay attention to them and take steps to minimize them whenever possible.
That's great advice. Any final thoughts before we wrap up?
You know, one thing that really struck me while reading these articles is how interconnected all the parameters are in injection molding.
Yeah, we talked about that. It's like a delicate dance.
It is.
Yeah.
And it really highlights the importance of a holistic approach. You can't just focus on one variable in isolation. You need to consider how everything interacts and work to optimize the entire process.
So it's all about finding that perfect harmony to create those flawless parts.
Exactly. And that's what makes injection molding such a fascinating and challenging field.
Well, that's a perfect note to end on. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the world of melt temperature and fusion marks. We hope you learned some valuable insights that you can apply to your own injection molding projects. So we've talked about how to prevent fusion marks, but what if we could actually use them to our advantage? Oh, that's an interesting idea. You mean instead of seeing them as defects, we could embrace them as design elements?
Exactly. What if we could intentionally create fusion marks in specific spots to reinforce the part? Or even create unique textures or patterns.
That's pretty outside the box thinking. I like it.
Right. It's like turning a negative into a positive.
It would definitely require a deep understanding of material behavior and the injection molding process. But it could open up some really cool possibilities.
It could revolutionize the way we think about part design.
Absolutely. Instead of always striving for perfect uniformity, we could leverage those fusion lines to create something truly unique and functional.
It's all about pushing the boundaries of what's possible.
I agree. And who knows what kind of innovations we might see in the future as injection molding technology continues to evolve.
It's an exciting time to be in this field, that's for sure.
It is. Well, on that note, I think we've covered a lot of ground today. Melt temperature is a complex topic, but hopefully our listeners now have a better understanding of its importance and the many factors that need to be considered.
Yeah, it's definitely not as simple as just setting the dial and hit and go.
Nope, it's a delicate balancing act.
Yeah.
But when you get it right, the results can be pretty amazing.
They can.
So for all you injection molding enthusiasts out there, keep experimenting, keep learning, and never be afraid to push the boundaries.
And remember, those fusion marks might just be the key to unlocking your next big innovation.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the world of melt temperature and fusion marks. We'll catch you next time.